This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Dogcast Radio. On today's episode, do you think you'd like to own this clever dog?
His tricks include roll over, play dead, howl, shake paw, and even break wind.
We have an interview with trainer, behaviourist and author Gwen Bailey, and we should all be interested in this information.
People need to understand that they're going to keep animals of a different species in their homes. They really need to understand them.
Plus, we have important training advice from Mim Edwards.
A good trainer will try not to ask their dog to do anything if they know there's any chance the dog can't or won't comply with that request.
First of all, we're going to talk about an unusual breed. They originated in ancient Egypt, and some of them were mummified. Famous owners include Mary, Queen of Scots, Charles I, Frederick the Great, Catherine the Great, and Queen Victoria. They're a toy breed, and they're the smallest sighthound. But would you recognise one? It's the Italian Greyhound, and we asked breeder Leona Bortis from Arkansas to tell us about them.
An average Italian Greyhound is about 15 inches at the shoulders, and they weigh about 10 pounds.
And what's their character like?
They love to play, they love to run, they're very loving, they don't bark a lot. They like to sleep with you, they like to get under the covers, and they're just very loving and they love to play. They love their toys, they'll play a lot. They are pretty active.
Well, do they make a good family dog?
Very good. Excellent with children. With other animals, they'll get along good with cats or other dogs even. They're very easygoing animals. Like I said, they're not biters. They just love to play. They love the attention. You throw something. I've got some 10-week-old puppies right now that will fetch and bring toys back to you.
Lovely. Oh. What about weather? Do they suffer from heat or cold or anything like that?
They don't like the real cold. They rather stay in the house. So most of my dogs, I train them to go outside, and I also paper train them, so when it's real cold, they don't have to go out.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll potty on a newspaper.
But in general, they like company.
Oh, yes, and they really get along better if there's two of them in a family instead of just one.
Mm.
They do better in pairs. But yes, they love people. They want to be, you know, part of the family and in the house. They're just very family orientated.
Mm. Why do they do better in pairs?
They just seem to get along better with that. Well, they'll play a lot in that way with each other. They like to run, and most people that has one will end up getting the second one. And I've had people that bought two from me at a time.
Mm. And do they want to please? Are they good to train?
Oh yeah, they're very easy to train. They love to do, like, obedience, or here in America we do lure coursing.
Now, what does that entail?
Okay, well, lure coursing, they do it with any side hound. They'll do it with your greyhound, your Afghan hound, and they set up a course with a wire along the ground, and what they do is they drag a flag or a white cloth, and the dogs chase that, because they're a side hound, they chase that around the course.
Right, yeah.
There's not a lot of Italian Greyhounds. A lot of people don't know about them. And the ones I have, I show here in the United States. They love to please. They'll prance around the ring almost.
Yeah. The two that we met were so sweet and so dainty, because we've got a black Labrador that bumbles around the place. These two little dogs were so dainty. They were gorgeous. But very different from what I'm used to, you know. They're certainly not what I'm used to, but they are a delightful little dog. The two that we met belong to a lovely couple called Eunice and Tony. They had sweet, gentle dogs that proved to be very illustrious company for our bumbling Labrador.
Many years ago, I was walking my border collie and gentleman kicked a dog in the road. And I picked it up in my arms, and I'd never, ever handled a dog so beautiful. It had like a moleskin coat, and very small and very dainty and very exquisite. And it didn't panic or anything. It was badly grazed down its shoulder.
The dog was fine. Eunice went on to have other dogs, but never forgot that dog that was involved in the road accident. She did some research, and she found out it was indeed an Italian greyhound. She decided the time was right to get one, and she contacted her local rescue centre.
And she said, because we've got a cat, I couldn't have a rescue one. found out later she'd had an unfortunate experience where the cat had terrorised the dog.
Oh dear.
So it was too, she thought it was too risky. She gave me a contact. I phoned the lady and she'd had three puppies, one little boy and two girls. I was able to go over, I think it was about the third week, and I started visiting. Mm. And I visited every week after that.
It's lovely when you're involved from the start, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it was really lovely.
That was Cara.
And then I knew they should really be in pairs. It's better for them to be as a group, but I pair was enough for me, I thought.
Yes.
but I put our name down for a rescue because I said, Cara and the cat get on absolutely fine. The next thing I get is a phone call to say, would I like a 9-month-old? And she came into our home and we never looked back. She just fitted in.
Mm.
And I just wouldn't be without them. And we just loved them a bit. So intelligent, so loving. We neither of us actually realised how much attention we would get once we owned an Italian greyhound. And we laughed one year on holiday with Cara at Lyme Regis.
Mm.
We sat on the front and we said, if we'd got 10p for every person that had stopped and talked to us, wrote the bill, we'd have paid for our cottage.
Yeah, they do look a gorgeous, dainty dog. They're just, and it's that coat. You've got to touch that coat, haven't you?
You have got to touch it, yes.
Could you tell us about your experiences at Crufts?
Yes. Many years ago as a child, my parents used to take me to Crufts because I've always been dog mad. And I used to think, oh, I'd love to do that with a golden retriever. I did have a little go at showing, but I really had no one to help me. And that just fell by the wayside and I chose to do other things.
Mm.
And then when we were talking to this lady, and she said, you could show her if you wanted to. She said, yes, we'll help you. You can go to these little open shows to start with,
mm.
and then go to the championship shows.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, yeah, all right, we'll give it a go, because that was something I wanted to do. And so that's how I started with her. You go to ringcraft classes, where you mix up with other people, with other breeds. You get somebody who teaches you how to hold your dog in the ring, how to make it stand so to get the most out of it, so the judge takes notice of it. How to do the walking, which way's the turn. It's actually practicing what you will actually do in the show ring. Some dogs do it quite quickly and some dogs take quite a long time to get the hang of it.
As I imagine some people do.
Yes, yes, yes. They're teaching the owners just as much as they're teaching the dog.
Mm.
And then I started doing the open shows and then I entered the championship shows. For Italian greyhounds, if you get a first, second or third at the championship show, that qualifies you to go to Crufts the following year. And I managed to do that with Cara.
Mm.
And first year at Crufts, I got a fifth. And the following year, I managed to qualify again. But I didn't actually get a prize in the pedigree class. I got a prize in the good citizen class with her.
Oh, right.
They run a good citizen class now.
Mm.
And it's just the teaching the dog general behaviour. And she's got a bronze. I got a bronze and a silver. I've not had a chance to do the gold yet, but she's done a bronze and silver. And I got third in that.
Excellent, yeah.
Then the following year, I qualified her again for Crufts at Bath, I think it was. She got a third. And then that next year, she got a first in Good Citizen.
Excellent. Yeah. At Crufts?
Yes, at Crufts.
And are you hoping to get to Crufts next year?
I have, yes. We went to Driffield at Doncaster Race Courses in October, and both Cara and Bronte got a second.
Excellent. So you take both of them next year?
Yes, both go to Crufts.
So, it's fingers crossed for Bronte and Cara at Crufts in March 2006. We'll try and catch up with them during or after Crufts. Best of luck, girls. The owner's website address is www.bortis.8k.com. There's a link on our website to her website. And on our site, you can also see a photo of one of Leona's champion dogs and also pictures of Eunice with her dogs. Still coming up is training advice from Mim Edwards and our interview with behaviourist Gwen Bailey about her book, What Is My Dog Thinking?
Did you know the largest litter was born to a mastiff and consisted of 24 puppies?
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.bortis.8k.com. dogcastradio.com.
And now for our younger listeners, it's Puppy Playtime! RoboPet is a very fun dog. If your parents think that having a dog is too much work, try RoboPet. He knows tricks, will follow a laser, and won't bump into things. You can put him in command mode and he will follow your instructions, or you can just let him wander around making his own decisions. His tricks include roll over, play dead, howl, shake paw, and even break wind. But he doesn't cost a penny in dog treats. If you just want to sit back and have a rest, you can always turn him off. And like a real dog, you can see pictures of RoboPet with me and Buddy on our website and find out more about rehoming a RoboPet. We have taught our dog Buddy to play dead. Give your dog the down command and get him to lie down. Have a treat in your hand and lower it to the floor. Gently push your dog's shoulders to roll him over onto his side. As soon as he gets towards the lying flat on his side, give the treat. He will soon get the idea that lying on his side gets him a treat. Now you need to add a command. We use bang and pretend to shoot him. He does this trick very well and it won him a rosette for best trick in show. Always keep training sessions short and give lots of praise. Remember to have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has fun with you. Did you know the tallest dog breed is the Irish Wolfhound?
2 Minute Fiction by Julie Hill. Perspective. I had to pop into the vet's the other day, and while I was in there, I couldn't help but overhear the conversation going on between the vet's receptionist and a lady with a beautiful pedigree dog. The dog was gorgeous, sleek and glossy, and sitting as meek as you like at the lady's feet. The lady was anything but meek. "That can't be right. You've got it wrong," she was shouting at the poor girl behind the desk, who was trying in vain to explain the bill. The dog was fed up by this point. He yawned and lay down on the floor, head on his paws with his eyes shut, probably pretending to be somewhere else. "I can't afford this. I'm not paying," the woman was exclaiming, and we were all getting pretty fed up with her by now. You see, the thing is, I'd had a good look at her. She had an expensive leather handbag. Her clothes might well have been designer labels for all I know. I'm not really interested in clothes. There were no scuffs on her shoes, and I'd seen her arrive in a large, shiny car with a personalised number plate. So, obviously, you can work out as well as I can that she was plainly not short of money. It wasn't that she couldn't afford the bill. It was that she didn't want to spend that much on her dog. I'd had enough of the shouting by now, and I've never been one for keeping quiet, so I decided to get involved. I opened my mouth and told that mean woman just what I thought of her. I barked like the best watchdog you've ever heard. "Daisy, that's not like you," my person said, pulling me against her, stroking me soothingly. "Just calm down. It's all right." So I was quiet, and I leant against her leg pleasantly. That horrible woman kept shouting. Her well-bred dog kept pretending to be asleep. I realized something. My person isn't rich, but I know she would never begrudge me a single penny. She loves me, and I love her. I may be a humble crossbreed, but compared to that poor pedigree with the mean owner, I'm the luckiest dog in the world. That was 2 Minute Fiction by Julie Hill.
Did you know the smallest dog breed is the Chihuahua?
We've heard from Mim Edwards, who's based in Adelaide, before, and I hope we've all benefited from her very positive spin on dog training. I took advantage of my access to her, and I asked her about a problem I have with Buddy. He has a good recall, and when he's at home or in the garden, he knows what I expect, and he will come back. But often, as soon as we're in the park, and there's children with a football or other dogs, it's not so good, and he often gets distracted. So I asked her, how do I get a good recall with all these distractions?
Okay, well, I mean, it's fantastic that you've started at home, you know, that you call him at home, and I presume you're rewarding him for coming to you at home and in your back garden. And I'm sure if you go to the park and there's nothing else better around, he's more than happy to come to you for a bit of dried liver or a bit of cheese or whatever you might have in your pocket. Now, a lot of dogs coming when called, a lot of that comes with maturity too. So some people have really high expectations of very young dogs who don't have the maturity and the expertise to know when to come every time. Dogs learn by association and repetition. So basically you need to do quite a number of repetitions, and I'm talking 20 to 30 repetitions a day, every day for about the first 18 months to get what we call a really reliable recall where you can get the dog away from a really distracting environment. Some dogs, of course, learn from a very early age. They don't have much interest in other dogs. They're more people-oriented or they're more food-oriented. And they'll be a lot easier to get back. Some Labradors, I mean, they're just social butterflies. They love to go and say hello to everybody. They love to go and say hello to other dogs. And they just think that everybody will reciprocate in the same way that they feel. Now, every time you go to the park and you let your dog off for a run, and let's face it, we all want our dogs to be able to run free when we go to the park or when we go hiking or when we go to the beach. But every time you let your dog off and your dog takes off and ignores that you're calling, that just reinforces to the dog that he can ignore you. So every time your dog gets a chance to practice that, better and better and better at it. Do not let your dog off lead. Any chance at all that you're going to need to call your dog and your dog is not going to come. The other thing, of course, about calling your dog is you don't want to be standing there calling your dog's name forlornly half a dozen, even 20 times, and watching your dog sail into the distance. You might as well save your breath. So you try not to call your dog. I mean, one of the things that we say is a good trainer will try not to ask their dog to do anything if they know there's any chance the dog can't or won't comply with that request. So that's the first thing. So if you see your dog taking off into the distance, you might as well save your breath and get your legs pumping, because your dog is he literally probably, because he's got a one-track mind. He wants to get to whatever it is that is enticing him over the other side of the park. How do you train that behaviour? Well, you put your dog on a very long lead, and we're talking about a 10 or a 20-metre lead, which has got a clip at one end and a handle at the other, and you attach your dog to the lead, and you go down to the park or the beach or wherever it is you want to train your dog, and you're walking along, doldy, oldy, oldy, and your dog is ranging around you to the distance of 10 or 20 metres around you, you know, which is the length of the lead. Periodically, you call the dog, Fluffy, come. If the dog comes, well and good. You bring off and play again. So the dog actually gets two rewards. He gets the reward of the food and he gets to go off and play again. I mean, one of the mistakes the majority of people make is that they only call their dog when they're going to put the lead on to go back home. So we need to change that perception in the dog's mind as well. So you call your dog. Once your dog is willing, you know, once you're willing to bet £100 or $100, whatever it might be, that your dog is going to come to you 9 out of 10 times every time you call him, when you are hanging on to the handle of the lead, well, then you can say, well, I think my dog has an understanding of what it is that I want it to do. So what you do is you let the dog trail the lead. In other words, this dog has got 10 or 20 metres of nylon webbing trailing along behind him, so that if you can see trouble looming in the form of, you know, a couple of ferocious chihuahuas or your dog's getting too close to the road or whatever it might be, you can quickly run up to where the lead is trailing behind the dog, step on the handle and bring the dog into you. So rather than being reactive, you need to be proactive. You need to look around, scope the place like Dick Tracy, you know, on high alert. See if there's any, you know, see if there's any dogs in the distance that your dog might head towards. What I'm saying is, I guess, be aware of what's around that might cause your dog to disobey you, and start training for these behaviours that you want in the situations that you want, but doing it on a long lead. So the long lead actually becomes a management tool because we're managing the situation, and a training tool because we actually use it to train the recall. Basically, it takes as long as it takes to get the dog to come to you every single time. Once the dog's doing it reliably, of course, then you can remove the lead. And you might only just need to put the lead on to remind the dog what it's all about. If they have a memory lapse or every couple of months, or if you think your dog's getting, you know, a bit too much like a teenager or something, saying, you're not the boss of me, make me, you might just put the long lead on to remind the dog.
I'm still acting on Mim's advice, and it does seem to be reaping rewards. You can check out Mim's website at www.petdogtraining.com.au. Thanks, Mim, for some brilliant advice. Hopefully we'll be hearing from Mim again in the future. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Did you know the most intelligent dog breed is fought out between the poodle and the border collie?
Perhaps it might be wise if those of you of a nervous disposition left the room for a while, because right now we're going to have Spot the Difference on the radio. Yes, Spot the Difference. It's an audio Spot the Difference, though. You're going to hear two sketches with slight differences between them. And to win your Dogcast Radio T-shirt, what you have to do is send us, in the usual ways, addresses will be up at the end of the programme, send us the differences you notice between these two sketches. Here's version A.
Good morning. I've decided on a whim I'd like to buy a dog.
Oh, yes. What sort would you like?
I'd like a well-behaved, obedient, toilet-trained, cute little puppy, please.
Well, I always have lots of puppies, so we should be able to sort you out. Look here. These are only small. Buy one, get one free. How about that?
Do they shed?
No, you won't need a shed. A little kennel would do for these.
No, what about those over there?
Very nice they are, but very rare. Expensive.
I hope you've had them health tested, then.
Oh, no. Animal testing is cruel and wrong, and we don't agree with it.
I'd never thought of it like that.
Sadly, not many people do.
I want something that's small enough to carry in my handbag, but big enough to be a burglar deterrent.
You mean a gun?
No, I want a dog. Do you really know what you're doing? Are you a member of any regulatory scheme?
Oh, yes. Neighbourhood Watch and Weight Watchers.
Well, that seems to be in order. Those puppies over there, how big will they grow?
Huge, and they take lots of exercise.
No, what about those sleek-looking ones?
Lovely, but you have to keep them out of the cold.
No, those fluffy ones.
Need a lot of grooming.
No, those black and white ones.
Need a lot of training.
No, no, no. Look, I want something that will be cuddly, friendly, always there for me, and never any bother. Do you have what I'm looking for?
Yes, love. Here's a cuddly toy.
Here's version B.
Good afternoon. I've decided on a whim I'd like to buy a dog.
Oh, yes. What sort would you like?
I'd like a well-behaved, obedient, toilet-trained, cute little puppy, please.
Well, I always have lots of dogs from around the world, so we should be able to sort you out. Look here. These are only small, two for the price of one. How about that?
Do they shed?
You won't need a shed. A little kennel would do for these.
No, what about those over there?
Very nice they are, but very rare. Expensive.
I hope you've had them health tested, then.
Oh, no. Animal testing is cruel and wrong, and we don't agree with it.
I never thought of it like that.
Sadly, not many people do.
I want something that's small enough to carry in my handbag, but big enough to be a burglar deterrent.
You mean a mace spray?
No, I want a dog. Do you really know what you're doing? Are you a member of any regulatory scheme?
Oh, yes. Neighbourhood Watch and Weight Watchers.
Well, that seems to be in order. Those puppies over there, how big will they grow?
Huge, and they take lots of exercise.
No, what about those sleek-looking ones?
Lovely, but you have to keep them out of the heat.
No, those fluffy ones.
Need a lot of grooming.
No, those black and white ones.
Need a lot of sheep to herd.
No, no, no. Look, I want something that will be cuddly, friendly, always there for me, and never any bother. Do you have what I'm looking for?
Yes, love. Here's a cuddly toy.
Ah, well, the eagle-eared amongst you will have spotted 6 differences. Note them down and send them to us, and you could win yourself a Dogcast Radio T-shirt.
Did you know the richest dog in the world was a standard poodle called Toby, who was left $75 billion in his owner's will in 1932?
Gwen Bailey is a trainer, a behaviourist, she runs her own puppy school, and she's an author. I talked to her about her book, What Is My Dog Thinking? With this book, she's trying to build bridges between people and dogs so that we understand our dogs better, and she certainly gave me an insight into my dog's behaviour.
Okay, well, what I've tried to do really is give people different behaviours that their dogs will do, quite mm-hmm. natural behaviours, mm-hmm. and then explain them for them so they can get some kind of understanding of why they're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when we're talking about dogs chasing their tail, we know that dogs are very active creatures, and they've descended from animals that we've bred to work all day and every day and do things, you know, constantly beyond the go and working. And what we've then done is we've brought them into pet homes where we expect them to sit down and not do much all day. Mm. Consequently, they've got lots of energy, and some of them, particularly the ones that are bred to chase, like the herding breeds, tend to be very interested in anything that moves, and very often the only thing that's moving in the environment is the other end of their body, which is their tail. So it's fun to chase them, and they do that, and then it gets to be a habit, or can get to be a very bad habit, and then they spend a lot of time spinning and building up muscles on one side of their body only because they've been in a certain direction.
Do they?
Yeah, if you look at your dog chasing his tail, it'll very often be going in one left-hand circle, or certainly some dogs are right-hand circle.
Ah.
Very big muscles on one side and not the other side, so they're unbalanced. Hopefully, most dogs don't chase their tail. Mm. But that's why they do it, basically, because they're bored with nothing else to do. They need more stimulation, and they need really to be playing with toys. So they get to learn how to play with toys with people, which is a much more fulfilling game, and stimulate some of their predatory aspects of their nature that are still there, even though we feed them plenty of food. They still want to go out and have fun catching and hunting. So if we divert that onto toys, we've got a very safe way of using up that dog's instincts and desire to do things. Which is much better than having them go out chasing rabbits, getting run over and things, chasing deer, or chasing their tail, which again is a very unsatisfactory game and can lead to all sorts of problems.
Mm-hmm. I shall certainly be watching Buddy now and see which way he goes. I've never noticed that.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? It's a bit like us being left-handed or right-handed, really.
Yes, yeah. Now, the other thing I noticed from the website about this book is, the one that really intrigued me is, why does your dog yawn when he's not tired?
Oh, yes, that was in the safety section, because what I've had to do is divide behaviours into different categories so that people can help people understand them. And one of the things that's very important to dogs, as it is for people, is staying safe. So a lot of the behaviours you see dogs doing when they're not feeling safe don't necessarily get recognised by people as safety behaviours. So dogs do a lot of things when they're stressed that people don't notice. And what I'm trying to do here is bridge the gap between owners and dogs so the dogs get understood better and people can take action quickly to make the dog feel more relaxed and safer. And one of the things dogs do when they're stressed is they yawn. And they yawn just like we do when we're unhappy. And if you're about to give a talk or you're about to go to the dentist or something like that that you're not really happy with, you do yawn, you yawn and stretch and try to make yourself feel better by doing it. Mm. Dogs are very, very prone to yawning when they're stressed. So if you stare at a dog for a long time, you'll probably find that it yawns. And that's just a way of coping with the stress it's feeling. So people can start to, their dogs are not always tired, and they yawn. A lot of people will see their dog yawn and say, oh, look, he's tired. And he's not tired at all. He's just feeling a bit under pressure. But people can appreciate they're under pressure. They can do something about it. The other things they'll do, turn their heads turn their heads away from the pressure that they're feeling. They will, if you watch the body language, a lot of the pictures in the book are showing you the different body language aspects, so that you can study the different aspects. And once you start to realise, you know, what they do with their ears and their tail and their tense faces, you can start to pick out dogs that are stressed. You know, and they turn their body sideways on to the animal that's stressing them, or they will, you know, very confident dogs will put their tails up, make themselves much bigger, as big as possible when they feel threatened and feeling, you know, under pressure from something, so that they can try to fend the other dog off and make it go away just by looking big and threatening. So, but and everybody says, oh, that dog's a bit aggressive, but actually it's due to the fear that they're feeling inside very often, not necessarily feeling too confident about itself. It's just trying to get rid of any potential threats.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that we need to know if we're going to make sure our dog's comfortable with this.
That's interesting, because I remember when my dog's three now, and when he was a lot younger, he would get on the passenger seat.
Yes.
And I would get in and I'd say, no, get down. And he would turn his head away.
Now,
I interpreted that as, oh, look at him, he's pretending he can't see me. But obviously he was thinking, you're stressing me and making me get down. I don't want to.
that's absolutely a classic kind of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And often people see when they shout at dogs and they get cross with them, the dog will show submission to them in an effort to turn off their anger, which is a very natural thing for dogs to do. They'll try, because it works with other dogs, if they show submission and the dog's attacking them, then usually the other dog will give up and say, well, okay, I see that you've given in, then I'll leave you alone. So in order to show submission, the dog will put his head right down, look down, put his ears right back, and crouch. And to us, it looks for all the world like they're looking at And people often say, look, he knows he's done wrong, so they're less than guilty. And then they'll punish them more. So it's a really sad thing, and we need to understand, and people need to understand, if they're going to keep animals of a different species in their homes, they really need to understand them. And that's really why I wrote the book.
Well, keep an eye on your dog. Which way does he spin when he chases his tail? Perhaps we ought to have a poll. Does your dog spin left or right, or is he an undecided? Let us know. Gwen's website can be found at www.dogbehaviour.com, where you can find out more about Gwen and for other books as well. We'll be hearing more from Gwen in the future. If you have training problems or issues that you'd like us to put to an expert, do get in touch. The addresses will be coming up soon. Keep the emails coming in. We've had emails in with feedback on what we're already doing and requests for breed profiles and other things. It is lovely to hear from you. So whether you've got a story to tell, advice to share, breed you'd like to find out about, or maybe a breed you'd like to defend, let us know. If you've enjoyed listening to Dogcast Radio, please remember to vote for us in Podcast Alley. In our new twice-monthly format, our next episode is scheduled for November the 26th and will feature an interview with a dog whisperer. Don't miss it. Till then, look after yourself and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Doctor, doctor, I keep thinking I'm a dog.
Good grief. How long has this been going on for?
Since I was a puppy.